Hey, thank you everybody for tuning in to this weekend's episode of Nevada Backcountry. We're going to kind of dive into muzzleloaders. We've covered them briefly on the show, however, did not do the full deep dive.
Yeah, especially with that new Policy 24 coming out.
There's going to be a lot more tags for muzzleloaders.
Well, yeah, for primitive weapons, so folks might be looking to transition from rifle to maybe getting a better chance of pulling some tags with muzzleloader.
Yeah, and muzzleloader is kind of the logical leap into traditional stuff.
Yeah.
Versus going from center fire rifle to like recurve.
Yeah, or archery in general, you know.
So we'll do that. And then before though, let's, we wanted to touch on communication. I think both you and I use the same communication device.
Yeah. We're both using that InReach Mini.
Yep.
So,
and I got a whole list. We can go through that.
Yeah. There's so
first,
many.
Thank you to Truck Envy for sponsoring the show. How do you want to break these down, Dave? Communication stuff.
That's a tough one because it really depends on what it is you want to use it for. Are you just going to use it for a simple, like you download a message, a standardized message that tells your wife, husband, friends, whomever, you know, yep, I'm okay. I'm still out here. I'm doing fine. You know, simple one button push.
Right.
Or you've got the distress one that you hit the button and it sends it out to everyone saying, I'm in trouble. This is my location. And it sends your location. Like super simple ones to the really higher end ones, like some of the higher end Garmins and those that like you can text. You can do all kinds of stuff on them. And you got to just be, kind of figure out what it is you want for. For me, it's strictly just as simple as possible because I'm not so techie. And also I use one for my profession. So it was an easy jump for me. It's like, okay, I already know how to use this thing. So I'm just going to buy another one for my personal use because
that's the standard for where you work.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. A lot of folks have this particular one. We used to have the Spot device. It worked really well. I mean, they've got some really high-end Spot devices now, which is on the list. I've got a list of like the top six backcountry communication devices. It worked real well. We just transitioned to the InReach a couple years back.
I think those are the most ubiquitous for a reason, but let's get into the list. Here's how I broke it down. I've got basically mapping, messaging in a self-contained unit. So I've got those ones where it's like you don't even need a cell phone.
Right.
You just can use the unit to do everything, including SOS, like you alluded to.
Yeah.
Then I put the next category would be like strictly messaging that needs a cell phone to function.
Yeah, kind of like that Zoleo.
Bingo. And then the last category, I did the can't message on its own. It can't SOS on its own. It's tied to a smartphone to do everything.
Right.
And those would be like the like Bivy stick or it's like mesh and go antenna mesh or something is one of those. And that falls into the category of there's no SOS button. There's no anything. It needs a cell phone to be used.
Correct.
So that'd be category three. So in category one, I think we're both in agreement, the Garmin InReach.
Yeah, the satellite one, that one that runs off of satellite systems. You don't need a cell phone to have any type of reception because as most of us Nevada hunters know, it doesn't take long for you to get off the anywhere and you have no service. You're done. It's just nothing. So I have a friend who has the Zoleo and it's very cost effective. It's an inexpensive system. You can buy a 1 month, 2 month, 3 month, 6 month package with it. And it's reasonably priced, but it needs a cell.
And so with the Zoleo, you have like a phone number that's your Zoleo phone number.
Exactly.
Correct?
Yeah. When you sign up for the plan, it provides you with a Zoleo phone number that connects to your cell phone, which uses its service to connect the Zoleo to the people that you may be messaging. So, it's cool if you're going to national parks and stuff and your family wants to make sure that you're good to go.
Right.
I guess.
Well, there's no mapping. So no. That's the big thing. So pros and cons. The Garmin, I clip it. It fits perfectly on my bino harness.
It's small. It's easy to use.
I lose my cell phone. I can still communicate.
Yeah.
It's tedious because you got to hunt for the letters unless you have the pre-formatted things going. But the big thing, the difference, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but with that Garmin inReach versus the Zoleo, there's not a tracking feature on the Zoleo, correct?
I don't think so. I don't think there's a tracking feature on the Zoleo where, yeah, once you activate the inReach or inReach version 2, it can track you.
Right.
And it can send that. So if it
automatically updates whoever you've predetermined.
Correct.
And it'll send that track to them so they kind of know, keep tabs on
me. Yeah, they can track
me.
You on like the app or something.
The
like
EarthMade
that.
App.
The EarthMade
yeah.
map. Yeah. So it's a great device. It's pretty simple to use and it does what you need. Like you said, with the inReach, you can easily pre-program your messages on your computer because the screen on that thing
sucks.
Yeah, you got to be like a 12-year-old kid with amazing eyesight to do anything on it. You pre-program everything on your computer. You can even create the list of the individuals that you want the message to go to. If it's just like, I'm doing okay message, that's this group. If it's the holy crud, I need someone to come and get me ASAP, like the emergency,
SOS thing. Yeah.
thing, then that can be that can go to the same group or a modified group.
When you fire the SOS on that, I think it alerts like basically every emergency service within coverage or whatever.
I think so.
Like you're going to have search and rescue. You're going to have everything. SOS is not like, oh man, I ran out of food yesterday. I'm still 10 miles from the truck. It's like, oh man, I'm in the bottom of a canyon with a compound fracture.
Right, exactly. And it sends out the cavalry.
Yeah, okay.
So you got to be real careful which button you hit. If you accidentally hit the SOS on this one and pretty much all of the units, it like verifies like, do you know you hit SOS?
I was about to say, I think it's a 3-second hold down.
Oh, okay. Oh,
I think you've got to depress it for like 3 seconds for it to actually fire off. If you just hit it, like tap it, I think it asks you to confirm.
Yeah.
But if it's a no kidding, like, man, I'm bleeding out, I'm getting lightheaded, you got to hold that sucker down for 3 seconds, I believe it is.
Yeah, so they can find your corpse. Got
Yeah, body recovery. Yeah. But, the Garmin too, Dave, that is the one unit I'm familiar with that is an all-in-one, I'll call it. Because I use the EarthMate app on my cell phone.
Right.
So if I do want to do the typical millennial text, I have that ability through the EarthMate app if that's fired up.
Right, right.
Now for 90-
And if you have reception on your phone, right?
Well, if I have reception, I can just text. You don't need reception. It Bluetooths to that.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, and so you can just message in the app using that as your satellite communicator. So it kills both birds, one stone. That's my vote for the most versatile. And again, it's that the old military thing. Two is one is none.
Right.
With that, I'm like, okay, I could slip and fall, land on my phone in my pocket. It's broken. I can still communicate just solely through that.
Yeah.
So that's my kind of like go-to. Now, you talked about the Zoleo, which you need a phone to use.
Yeah, I mean, and it depends on, they do have Zoleos that are similar to the inReach.
Oh, they do?
Just do
okay.
satellite messaging.
I'm only familiar with the Puck, like the little brick one.
And that's the most common one, I think, is the Puck. They do have a upper version of that, of the Puck, that has, I think there's a little screen on it. The inReach, this inReach, and they state the version too, because that's the latest one out, is by far the easiest to use. And the price point's pretty good. It's $300 for the unit.
Battery will last you 6 days. If you're constantly on it, I usually turn mine off when I go to sleep, but I run it. I just leave it on all day.
The battery life on that, the Garmin, is 28 days.
28 days. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, the Garmin inReach.
Whoa.
The battery life is 28 days.
Okay. Holy smokes. And now I got to assume that's like if you're not messaging or anything?
Yeah, if you're on it constant, it's going to be like your cell phone. I mean, if you just have your cell phone sitting on your desk and you're not message, you're not doing anything with it and you don't have anything open on it, you know,
right. Whatever it'll last be. Forever.
It, you know, a new cell phone will probably last 4 or 5 days before it starts yelling at you. But if you're on it all the time, searching Instagram and Face Smack and all that other stuff, then you're going to burn through your battery pretty quick.
I will say I've used it. What's the longest uninterrupted stretch? I think I've used mine for 7 days uninterrupted. And with that tracking feature turned on, I know by the time I came out, I was down to like 8 or 9% battery.
Yeah.
I had the tracking on the whole time. So my family could see.
If you have the tracker on the whole time, then yeah, your 28 days is probably not going to happen. I think there's something in here states like ends up being like about 200 hours.
Okay. That makes sense. The Spot. Let's talk about the Spot real quick.
Yeah.
What's the latest greatest is the Spot X, I think.
Yeah, that is the latest and greatest is the Spot X. That one has a lot of similar features to the InReach as well. Old Spot was kind of like the puck. It just there's no screen or anything on it. The new Spot X does have a small screen on it.
Does it have mapping?
I don't think so.
The ones I've seen, now I've never actually used one. The ones I've seen, it reminds me of like the old school, you remember those BlackBerry phones?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah, that's what the new Spot looks like. It looks like a BlackBerry phone with a Garmin big black antenna.
Right.
It's even got the Garmin color of orange.
Well, yeah, that's a, I like dropping things and losing them.
Oh, yeah.
But the, okay, so the Spot X is the latest, greatest iteration. I know it's a lot cheaper, the plans are, but I think it's like 12 bucks a month. Yeah, like strictly messaging though.
Yes.
I don't think it does any kind of mapping or any of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think it does any mapping either. It does track you, just like the InReach. It will track, and the batteries will last about, I think it's like, it's right around 200 hours as well.
Okay.
With 10-second segments of tracking.
And I know it has an SOS, but there is that safety feature of there's grid coordinates associated with wherever a message was sent.
Right, right.
Okay.
And the beauty of the Spot X is actually the messaging. If you don't have preset messages in your InReach, it does have that BlackBerry feature so you can type.
Just peck away.
You can just peck away at it instead of like the InReach where you've got a kind of old school flip phone it where you're
Pick each individual letter.
Yeah, it's like doing your password or something on Spectrum, and you're like, oh, geez, where's the Z? Where's the... So it does have a couple neat features in regards to that. It is a little bulky, though.
Any difference in messaging speed?
I don't think so. So how they message, you know, because that was one of the big questions that was asked was from people online was, once I hit the send button, how fast does it get there? Is it like my cell phone, like when I'm messaging a buddy and it's like instantaneously there? No.
Yeah.
Because it's got to go to a satellite. It's got to get processed. It's got to get brought back down. So what it comes down to, it's based on your satellite location and the location of the person.
Okay.
So they will get it. It's not going to be instantaneous. It may be, you know, they could get it a minute later.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Up to a couple minutes in some cases.
In some cases, yeah. Depending on where you are in the world and who you're messaging. I mean, if you're in Reno and you're messaging somebody in Fernley, probably going to be a little quicker than if you're in Zimbabwe and you just got mauled by something and you're messaging your wife in Reno. That's probably
going to take a minute.
It might take a while.
So if you ever want to see a grown man have a full-blown meltdown in the mountains... For whatever reason, my brother has zero patience with his Garmin InReach, and I always know if he's trying to check in, because I'll hear him like just making a racket.
Just being a gorilla.
And just pissed, like Yosemite Samming in the woods, and I know like, oh, he's doing his daily check-in with his wife.
And she hasn't responded quick enough?
It makes him so mad. So, and I think part of that too,
that's awesome.
Without going into all of his business, but he had access to like the latest, greatest cutting edge communication in the world when he was employed by the federal government.
So I think
he's very used to like instantaneous, here's this, here's that. And then, so then, stick him in the civilian world, and he's got to, like the rest of us schmucks, use one of these. Oh, buddy.
Changes his whole demeanor.
He is not a happy camper.
Yeah, he's like, I don't get access to the special satellites.
Yeah, good grief. No, moving on, before we wrap up and start diving into muzzleloaders, let's talk real quick about these. It's basically a satellite link. They're, I've seen them as small as about like a bigger USB stick. And then the one that most of my backcountry skiing friends use is called the Bivy stick.
Yeah, that's one of that's on here. But like the Bivy stick has no screen. It's very minimal.
Yep.
It has just like two features.
Yep.
Basically, the cool thing is the Bivy stick uses the same satellite system as a lot of the other units, like the Garmin's.
Okay.
Which is the Iridium.
Yes.
Satellite systems where the Spot uses a different. They use like Globostar.
Gotcha. Something. Okay.
Yeah. So most of them do use their Iridium system. So that's a good thing to know when you are searching and looking to purchase one of these things is like, okay, what's the most reliable satellite system that's going to, you know, get my message out there the best. I mean,
right.
So it's one thing to kind of deal with. And then that's the stick only has like 120 hour lifespan. You know, if you have a little power source you can recharge it with, it's always.
Like I said, I see them a lot. So in my hunting circle of friends, it's pretty much universally the Garmin InReach Minis and then a couple guys with Zaleos. And then in the other part of my life, that skiing circle of friends, everyone uses those Bivy sticks. And supposedly someone, if you're listening out there and you have a foot in both worlds like I do, by all means, chime in, text. Let me know if I'm wrong or not on this. But most of my friends turn those Bivy sticks off because supposedly it can interfere with the avalanche beacons.
Oh, really?
I don't know if that's true or if that's just a wives' tale. Like I said, you're listening out there. You know the correct answer to that. It's 775-884-9910. Shoot us a text and let us know if we're right on that. Let's go to break. When we come back, let's chat muzzleloaders.
Let's do it.
Thanks for hanging in there over the break. We are back on Nevada Backcountry. David Catalano and me, Henry Evans. This Sunday, we just wrapped up on communication. Now let's go into muzzleloaders. And we kind of talked off air, Dave. We want to start with different state regulations, right?
Yeah, I think that'd be a good way to start because, you know, like we said at the beginning of the show, that with like Nevada Commission Policy 24 getting passed and more tags will be distributed to the primitive hunting classes, which is muzzleloader and archery, you may see folks wanting to transition from their 308 or their rifle in general. Like you stated, the most obvious one would be transitioning to a muzzleloader.
Yeah, similar ergonomics, similar concepts.
Yeah, you can still reach out there a little ways, whatever, you know, 100, 150-ish, I guess. Some 200 if you've got good eyes and can see stuff. With that, you know, it's not a good idea just to go down to your local store and just say, yeah, sure, I'll take that one.
I'd like a muzzleloader, please.
I'd like a muzzleloader, please. Because I've been to a few stores around town, and I've actually seen muzzleloaders at some of these shops that actually have scopes on them.
Yep.
They sell them as a package. You know, it's XYZ muzzleloader with a little starter kit and a scope.
Well, yeah.
That's illegal in the state of Nevada.
And in fact, a lot of states out west.
Very few. I'm not even sure. We were just researching the western states. I don't think any of the western states allow you to have a scope on there.
I didn't go through every single state like you. I kind of focused on the west.
Yeah.
But I think it's not until you get back to the Midwest and back east that the prevalence of legal scoped muzzle loaders.
Yeah, and most of those are like no greater than 4 power because they can put scopes on their shotguns for slug hunting.
Exactly,
and I don't think they can be greater than a 4 power scope. But on the West, you know, we're talking like Colorado to California. I don't think there's a state that allows it. It's all iron sights.
Okay, so.
Or some allow fiber optics as long as the fiber optic isn't powered by a light with a battery or something in that fashion. If it doesn't, if it's gains its light from natural, you know, from the right. sun, from the fiber optics in the sun or something.
I think now that we're talking about that, Dave, I want to say, man, this is going to be one. You guys, hey, people listening at home, fact check us on this. I think at one point Arizona actually allowed scopes on muzzleloaders. Now, I could be wrong about that.
Oh, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Arizona has the loosest regulations
right.
on muzzleloaders. So
but Arizona, for us, yeah. Oregon, Washington, California,
Idaho,
yeah,
Utah.
No go.
Yeah, nothing. But yeah, in Arizona has no real laws in place. There's no minimum caliber. They don't have a scope restriction.
Gotcha. Okay. Dave's looking it up in real time.
We're in real time right here. Yeah, no scope restrictions.
Okay.
A long muzzle is as long as the muzzleloader is loaded from the muzzle and shoots black powder or synthetic black powder.
That's so those preformed pellets, loose powder, anything goes in Arizona.
So.
Oh, very cool. Okay. Do you want to touch on the fuster cluck that is California?
Oh, man, I got to write that one down. That's
take it with you.
That's golden. All right, cool. California
is all kinds of jacked up.
Yeah, if you get into their regulations, they kind of contradict themselves in a few spots. And I did some searching trying to figure out, okay, is it this or that? So in their regulation, they state, the main one that I saw was a single projectile loaded from the muzzle and at least 40 caliber in designation.
Okay.
So, and then as you move down the regulations, they have hunting in bold print. They'll have like hunting regulations, like bullet point. These are some of the big ones. And right in that, it says muzzleloaders must have a single barrel that is at least 45 calibers or larger.
Perfect.
But in the rest of the reg, it says 40 caliber or larger.
Yeah.
And I got onto a couple blog things and chat things. And even on those, people were like, no, dude, it's 40. No, man, it's 45. It's in the regs. No, it's 40. It's in the reg. So
technically, both parties are right.
Because technically.
Both are in the regs.
Yeah, technically, you're correct. So anyway, if to be safe, just grab a 50 caliber.
And you're good.
Call it good.
Yeah. I want to point out, too, this is your bread and butter. Regulations, this kind of stuff. This is not like me researching it and getting frustrated and going, man, I don't know what I'm reading. Dave speaks NRS and all that. Dave understands this stuff. So if David Catalano says this is confusing, your regulations don't make sense, there's a problem.
Yeah,
a big
you give
problem.
Me too much credit now.
No.
Now I feel like my head's a little heavy.
Good.
Yeah.
All right. So, moving on from California, like you said, a best bet get a 50 cal and be
just
done.
Just grab a 50 cal and call it good.
Yeah. Okay.
So if you're looking at just hunting the state of Nevada and saying, you know what, I just want to do the muzzleloader thing in Nevada because my
right.
So if that's the case, then all you need to worry about are Nevada's regs. So in Nevada, the muzzleloader can be rifled or smooth bored. It has to have a legal projectile, which is either a lead ball, a lead bullet, or a semi-jacketed bullet, or a metal alloy bullet that can expand.
Okay.
Or a sabot. You can also use sabots.
Okay.
In Nevada. No smokeless powder. It's prohibited in the state during muzzleloader season, which I guess means you could, if you're just out there shooting cans and stuff, you can test your smokeless powder. But for the hunting season, you cannot use smokeless powder.
Okay.
You can use Pyrodex or that 777
stuff.
State of Nevada, you can use the pellets.
Okay.
You know, there's those like drop-in pellet things.
And we'll go into
cool.
that in a little bit here, the differences. Yeah.
Yeah, because some states do not allow, you can't use pellets. It has
they have
to be
a loose powder,
loose powder law.
Yeah.
So the muzzleloader must be like a wheel lock, a match lock, a flint lock, or a percussion. So that's like a 209
okay.
Cap on it, where several other states don't allow the 209. So if you're going anywhere. But this is only Nevada, if you're only going to do Nevada. Nevada requires 45 caliber or larger,
Okay.
And there's no designation, as some states have, where this caliber is good for these animals, but if you go to the bigger animals or these particular animals, then you must have a 50 or bigger. Nevada, 45 or bigger for everything.
You're good to go.
Yeah. No scopes, no telescopic sights. Those are prohibited for during the muzzleloader season. Battery-operated or radioactive sights that produce their own light are prohibited in the state of Nevada for your sight, but just like a fiber optic line or material.
Like a shotgun bead, like some of those glowing.
Yeah, like on our bows, you know, you got the fiber optic. That's fine as long as it's not being lit up by a light created.
Artificial light source. Yeah, okay.
So those are the big ones for Nevada. If you can cover all of those, you're good to go. And hopefully the stores have staff that know. I've been to several of the stores just out of my own curiosity and just checking stuff. Some of the staff have no idea. Don't rely on the staff at the store to know Nevada's regulations or the latest and greatest regulations, because they probably don't.
Yeah, well, I was going to point out, and I'm not going to mention the store, but it's a little west of town, we'll say. There's everything from a box, like a DIY make your own muzzleloader kit.
Yeah.
To a fully scoped, and the only reason I knew it was a muzzleloader is because I was walking by the gun counter and I was looking at it. And I kind of went, that's a ramrod beneath that barrel. You know, muzzleloaders have that to ram. I was looking and I was like, what is that underneath the barrel on that rifle? It had a scope on it. And I went, oh, that's kind of weird, isn't it? And I was looking at it and then I saw, I can't remember what brand it was, but it was a muzzleloader with a scope on it. Now, I don't know, maybe that's for people that just want to take it out and shoot muzzleloaders.
Yeah, I mean, and there are plenty of people out there that just target shoot with them and they don't hunt with them. So they, you know, they see like, I wonder how far I can actually,
that's their jam.
That's their jam. That's their thing. Like long distance shooting with a muzzleloader. So they throw scopes on them. So that's fine.
But you could get yourself into a pickle walking in and going, man, that thing with the 28-inch barrel and the scope and that's a muzzleloader. And then the what looks like a Kentucky long rifle in a box that you make, that's a muzzleloader. Hey, they're both muzzleloaders. I'm good with either.
Yeah, no, know your stuff before you go to the store.
Yeah.
Is your best bet. And there's not a lot to really know. I mean, you can print it out and bring it with you and just verify it as you're purchasing your gear.
So would you say, Dave, then, because you went over all these states, would you say safe bet for 99.1% of the West going to be a 50 caliber?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. If you've got a 50 caliber, you're good in any state for every animal.
Okay.
California, you know, you can go down to a 40 caliber / 45 caliber for hunting deer, pronghorn, and bear. But anything bigger is going to require, you know, like elk and such, is going to require 50 cal.
Okay. So if you're going to buy one and you plan on hunting out of state in some of these neighboring states, just buy a 50 cal and be done.
Just be done with it. And then, you know, some states like California have grain sizes. You have to have a minimum weight.
Oh, they do. Okay.
Yeah, some of them have minimum weight. So 170 grain for deer and antelope, and then 220 or 210 grain for elk and bear. And so again,
I don't know.
So again, if you are going out of state and you're going to go, okay, I'm going to make muzzleloader one of my new jams and I'm going to start doing it in other states, just find the state that you're going to hunt that has the tightest regulations and base everything off of that, unless you just want to have two or three different sets of gear.
Right.
You know, so if you're going to hunt like Idaho, which has some of the strictest regulations, then your best bet is get a muzzleloader that is suitable for Idaho, because if it's suitable in Idaho, it's probably going to be just fine anywhere else.
Agreed. Yeah. Montana and Idaho are the two that come to mind where it is.
Yeah. Like you can't use 209.
No inline primers. None of that.
None of that stuff.
You know, we threw a lot of terms out there, Dave. We're talking about sabots and conical lead bullets and all that. Why don't we back up for, after the break here, we'll get into just the basics of muzzle loading, differences between like a side lock gun, an inline gun, why it's called a muzzle loader in the first place.
All right.
So we'll do that coming up after the break here on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Hey, we have covered a lot of ground this episode, both on backcountry communication devices and muzzle loaders. If you missed something or you weren't diligently taking notes, which I don't know why you wouldn't be. Please don't be diligently taking notes. Just enjoy the show. But if you want to go back and check something, thought I said something wrong, which is highly likely, the podcasts are all available either on, if you're an iOS user, they're on the Apple Podcasts platform. You can also go to 991fmtalk.com, click on the podcast tab, and there's every episode we've ever done available for you to listen to. Also, big shout out to Legacy Sports International right here in Reno. Phenomenal company, phenomenal products, home of the Howa Superlight rifle. I was just over there actually chatting with Andy McCormick the other day. The new Howa Superlights, it's an inline change. They're going a couple different calibers and they're shortening the barrel a touch. 4.3 pounds. They were 4.7. 4.3 pounds for a true, accurate backcountry hunting rifle. Go check them out. That's Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight. Before we went to break there, Dave, we were talking about different regulations in different states with muzzle loaders.
Yep.
A lot of terms got thrown out.
Lots of terms.
So let's back up right off the bat. Difference between a muzzle loader versus a center fire rifle. What makes a muzzle loader a muzzle loader?
That the bullet and all of its parts, you know, powder and such, all have to be loaded from the tip of the muzzle.
Bingo. Yeah. Going down the pipe.
Yeah. With the little ramrod thing and all that coolness. Yeah. So, yeah, that's the difference.
It's literally in the name. You load it from the muzzle.
From the muzzle. Correct.
I'll give a plug. I tried to get somebody from the website on the show. Muzzle-loaders.com. The hyphen is important. If you don't put it in there, you go to a different website. There is a wealth of information.
Yeah.
They have a full-blown muzzle loaders for beginners section, A to Z. This is what you need. This is what we recommend. This is how it's done, et cetera, et cetera. Phenomenal resource. If you're somebody like me who I've shot a muzzle loader at a range, I've never hunted with one. I've never drawn a tag.
I've never hunted with a muzzle loader. I've been with people and I've been involved in hunts where the person's used a muzzle loader and harvested an elk, a deer. I mean, I did take a class a while back on muzzle loading.
Okay.
Which, you know, we had muzzle loaders. We learned, you know, the basics of a muzzle loader. We went through how to properly load it, arm it, you know, fire it, the whole nine yards. We used loose powder. We use the pellets, so there's a real cool gamut of variations that you were able to test out and try. You know, I've always wanted to try to hunt something with a rifle, which I haven't done. So, but I think going from archery my whole life, now muzzleloader would probably be the next step. It's pretty inexpensive to get into. I mean, it's definitely a lot cheaper than archery.
Oh, yeah.
And it's probably cheaper than a rifle because you're not buying the scope, so you're not dropping another $15,000, $18,000, $2,000+ on a really nice high-end piece of glass.
Yeah, exactly.
So some of those muzzle loaders, you know, everyone's going to tell you it's kind of like archery or anything else, that everyone's got their favorites. You need to go with this one. You need to go with that one. So what I'm saying is you can probably grab anyone that just feels good. You just put it on your shoulder, see what feels really nice, make sure it's got some good break action. You know, it has what it needs to be legal in your state.
When you get into the real traditional stuff, which I'll be honest,
like
there's
the Hawkins
or even like the Kentucky long rifles.
Yeah.
Going into one of these box stores that has the DIY kits.
Yeah. Do you want to build
one? I want to build one.
I don't know if I trust you.
I don't trust myself. Dave, there's a reason I haven't done it yet, right? Yeah. I value, well, I need my fingers to work.
That would be my worry would be that first shot, like, well, I ended up with a couple extra pieces, but I bet you they're just extras. Let's see if this thing shoots. Not a good idea.
But. Hey, so I'll tell you a quick sidebar. Bill Mott, longtime employee of Evans Broadcast Company, heck of a nice guy, great employee. Bill went on a hunting trip to Texas. He will wear an eye patch for the rest of his life from one of those, I won't say the company name, but anybody that knows firearms knows what I'm talking about. One of those straight pull firearms, bolt action, pull things. Something happened and it blew half of his face, took his eye, came back to work, and then finally retired to go live with family up in Washington, or care for an elderly family member in Washington State. But that is...
Took his right eye out?
Oh, yeah, and a good chunk. He slurred, had some problems.
Oh, damn. Was his nickname Lefty after that?
No, I can't remember. He was right-handed, so I don't... Yeah. I think everybody was just amazed he came back to work.
Yeah.
He was a real... Man, phenomenal human being, Bill Mott, but tie that in real quick. I picture Bill Mott when I think about building my own muzzle loader. And not to make light of a horrible situation, but I'll be honest with you.
It keeps you straight.
Yeah.
It keeps you making sure that, like, I don't think I've got the talent to do this properly.
It's probably not my wheelhouse, but I am intrigued by that whole flintlock, like, get back to the roots type thing.
It is. I mean, I shot one of the flintlock ones, and I remember the instructor saying, okay, once you squeeze that trigger and you can hear the click of the flintlock hitting the igniter, don't move.
There's
keep
a delay.
Focusing on the target. Keep that iron sight on the target. There's like a 1-2 second delay before the gun then fires. So So the first time I shot it, I shot, and then I kind of lifted up off the gun thinking, well, it was a dud.
What happened?
And then that thing went off, and that, you know, there's no pad on those damn things. It was like a brass.
The real old school.
Brass butt on it. And that thing went into my shoulder like getting hit with a sledgehammer.
Oh, yeah. No, thank you.
So I had to tough it out, act like a real tough guy. I ran to the bathroom and cried there. Then I came back and then shot it again. But, so.
You've got everything from truly using a piece of flint on a side lock gun the striker strikes the flint, creates a spark and ignites the loose powder.
Yeah.
To then one step more modern would be the percussion cap gun, which is still a side lock. You got to cock that hammer and little cap thing on there.
Yeah.
And then you get to what they refer to as inline systems.
Yeah.
Which are more modern. You're putting like an actual primer, I guess, inside behind you. You load it from the breech, basically.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. You pull that little breech piece off or back, and then you can load the primer into that and then bring the.
Gotcha.
Because when you pull the breech piece back, that it's like a spring type of
deal. Oh, okay. Spring. And I'm assuming you turn it to lock it or something.
Yeah. On some guns. And then you let it back in. And then once you pull the trigger, it just kind of, the hammer is powered by that spring or whatever mechanism it is, and pink hits primer and bing, bang, boom, and she's ripping.
Yeah, I will say there was a slight, nothing like I'm sure with the flintlock or anything, but
there's a little delay.
A little delay with my dad's, which I believe is just like an inline system. And it was, you know, coming from a centerfire only world to then shooting that, it was kind of like click, bang, instead of just bang.
Correct.
Yeah. But those are the three predominant types. I will say, again, going to that muzzle-loaders.com website, they recommend the CVA Wolf V2.
That's a good, and it's inexpensive.
Or the Traditions Buckstalker XT. And for people listening, make sure you look at what they call the Northwest legal ones, because that is what you will need in Nevada.
Oh, okay.
If you just do the bare ones, it comes with scope rings.
What I'm going to do.
Okay.
And I'm going to probably get you to do it with me. Maybe we should go down and pick up some.
Kits?
Like a nice, inexpensive, $200-$300 muzzle loader, we should kind of maybe
okay,
check all this out and see how well we can do with it. Because
you're talking about getting an inexpensive muzzle loader, not a kit.
Oh, I'm not building
one. Yeah, okay, okay. Well, that's where I thought you were going. No, I was like, did you not hear my cautionary tale?
No, I am full on board with your cautionary tale. I am with you there.
I'm not goofing with that, Dave.
I could definitely see some serious gun mechanics.
By watching my dad go through this stuff,
yeah,
the tinkering is in the powder.
Because they got the pellets that are
preformed pellets
and right. Raid.
And I might be totally wrong on that. You guys don't get on me over this. I'm using these numbers as an example. But let's say they come in 20 grain increments.
Right.
Okay. And for whatever reason, your gun and bullet combo shoot most accurately at 90 grains of powder.
Yeah.
You either have to learn to live with the 80 grains or 100 grains.
Yeah.
Because you're not breaking one of those and hoping that you've got it right.
Dude, no.
What I've learned through osmosis, I suppose you could say, is that there is a lot more flexibility with loose powder.
Yeah.
You can get it exactly where your gun likes it versus you may have to live with like a 3-inch group at 50 yards with the pellets because you can't hit that.
Hit that sweet spot.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that'd be kind of cool to do the pellets and then also try some of the loose powder. I've done both. When we were doing the flintlock stuff, you had the little elk horn and you poured,
oh, no kidding.
Yeah, you know, you had the little cap and each cap was whatever it was, 15 grains or something, and you fill it and you pour it in, so you do it like that. But they say the loose powder ignites better.
Oh, I believe then, that. No filler pellet. Binding
agents
or anything.
Yeah, there's no binding agents. And then like each pellet has to go off. They don't like, it's not like it goes off all at once. It's kind of like a pellet 1, 2, 3, 4.
That makes sense.
And it
goes
off type of thing. So
the show is Nevada Backcountry. Hopefully you guys enjoyed all of this. And big thanks to Huntin' House Archery Center. Go down, get a bow, get a setup before you draw an archery tag.
Yep, and take some lessons.
Hey, thank you everybody for tuning in. We're out of here. Tom Gresham is coming up next.